And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 235. I'm Silas Lindenstein.
I'm Samantha Run.
And this is the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle.
Probably.
Today, a fun episode of an episode of metaphors and growth. And you know what I like about us, Samantha? We are deep thinkers.
Yeah.
You know, we're not just your everyday comedian hitting the fart jokes.
No, definitely not. We're not just clean shaven and looking our best.
We're not. Definitely not at times. But we're deep thinkers. That's what I love. I love about joining with you each week is we get to have some thoughtful discussions, even though we do at some point need to figure out a way to do this in person again.
Yeah.
At some point, it would be nice to see in a room and see what you look like. For all I know, you don't have legs anymore.
Oh, gosh, please don't say such a thing.
I'm not saying you wouldn't have legs in the future. I'm just saying
this is I'm going to have to stand up now because now I'm so scared. The power of words.
Speaking of black, like...
Here's my other quote.
Every black person I know is wholly scared of me saying things that they're like, don't put that out there. Don't.
Hey, Steve, that's another black thing. Yeah.
We discuss some black things in there. Today. Some the topic, the discussion, what is, what isn't. And I think there's some topics that will further some conversations within people's families today. And I think that's the most important thing. If we can generate conversation and get people talking and making bets on whether they should, you know, hit people with cars or,
you know,
it's going to happen.
How many blankets they need to take.
Yeah.
For that.
All sorts of things. Yeah. Enjoyable episode. We should have a guest in a couple weeks. More things to come. So right now, though, just sit back, relax, open your hearts and open your ear holes and listen to episode number 235, Bonsai That Beast. What are your feelings on gardening?
Aspirational. Those are my feelings. I didn't think I was ever going to want or care about having a garden. I mean, they're beautiful. I just didn't know what I was going to do. And now I'm like looking forward to the day that I have a garden.
Is it because it symbolizes a yard or do you want to grow things? Do you have like this nurturing goal?
It's both. It's also like there's so much wound up into it. Like I think my kid would really enjoy it. Mm. I think it'd be relaxing. I think it'd be frustrating, but it could be relaxed. It depends how much of a perfectionist I was going to be about it. But my goal was not to be a perfectionist with it. My goal is to intentionally just go in and enjoy the process of it and then be delighted by if I actually grow things successfully other than weeds, which I'm pretty sure there's some plants I would be able to grow. And then,
Do you don't have a patio?
I
guess a lot of places don't allow you to put things out now.
I mean, I could put a couple of plants or something like that.
You can't grow a bunch of tomatoes.
I don't know if I could.
Well, they're hard. Maybe. They're hard too in patios, I guess. You really have to have direct sun. It's really hard to grow tomatoes in the Northwest if you don't have the perfect sun hitting you.
Right.
So I guess it'd be a challenging one. And then some things grow, but I have this thing where I'm growing maple trees, right? I've been working on growing maple trees. Last year I collected a bunch and I had other people give me some, but I forgot to grab theirs. So I'm going to grow theirs next year. So I was able to get them done in time to get a set. So I have like 8 new ones this year. Next year I plan to have a lot more. I'm going to get the time going. I really like maple trees, especially Japanese maples. And like, I have this idea of giving them away as gifts, like, as, you know, especially for clients and stuff. But then hopefully my hoarding tendencies don't come in and I don't like, okay, I'm never giving this away. Actually, I'm afraid of that happening.
It's hard because it's also like, I don't know. I feel like a tree, it's a living thing. And I love trees so much that it's like, could you really hoard like a tree that almost becomes like a family member to you? I mean, because it's like in your home, it's part of your land and your home.
Well, it depends how many you have, right? I mean, if I have 100.
Then you need a bigger yard.
Right. But you have to kind of like plan to give away.
Right.
And I didn't start early enough to do like to grow vegetables.
Mm.
So I will do vegetables.
Vegetables.
Vegetables outside once it's warm enough. I'll go get the I'll get the starters that people already have. But I did years ago when I first got into it and it was my hyper focus. You know, I grew them from scratch in our den from seeds and watched them grow and then brought them outside. So I was just all into it, you know. And then it is part of it is the, well, I did it and I achieved it. All right, move on to the next thing, right? But I have all these things built and I want to get some good gardens going. It doesn't save you money at all.
We had Japanese maples growing up when I was a kid in our yard. So actually, I was thinking in
here?
New York. No, like,
oh, you can grow them in New York.
Well, I grew up in Montana too, but like, no. Our home in New York, like,
well, I just didn't know Japanese maples could grow in New York naturally, like, because
I don't know if they grew naturally.
Well, because it's cold. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah,
I just thought it got so freezing there, but maybe. I don't know. I never really noticed them until out here.
Yeah.
And they're everywhere.
I'm actually kind of curious about this now.
They're great for bonsaiing, for one. And my parents just gave me a maple tree that's been growing in a pot for so many years. And I guess I said I would take it. I didn't realize they thought I would plant it in the ground. And now I'm feeling guilt. I'm like, oh, well, I want to like lop it and like bonsai this thing. Like, I don't want to put it in the ground anywhere here. I don't really have a spot for that. But like, it's fun having trees that are thick when you're doing bonsai, because it takes otherwise, you know, 50 years to grow them. But if you get them when they're big and are able to get them, then you have this thick trunk that you can work with. And so
that's cool.
That's what I was gonna do. And now I feel bad now that I think they didn't realize that's what I was thinking. So, but I drove home, like, I mean, it's big. Like, I think it's like eight or 9 feet tall.
Holy cow. Okay, so I'm sorry, I was partially distracted because I was looking up the Japanese maple, according to quick internet search says they do thrive in New York. So
fun fact
there. But so basically somebody gave you this large 8-foot tree.
My parents gave, I mean, it's, you know, it's got thin trunks, but like,
but
trunks
actually,
are thin, but it's eight feet
yeah, tall.
I had to lay it down in my pickup truck to drive it home
because
it would like, afraid it would ruin all its leaves and stuff. So
And you want to bonsai it, but you think they want you to plant it in your yard.
Well, they said something about planting it. And I was like, oh, I don't even remember agreeing to take this. But they messaged me saying like, hey, you going to come pick up that tree? Like, what? Huh? I guess they had asked me at one point. And I'm like, sure. I always take, if anyone offers me a tree, I take it because I bonsai and I lose some, you know. That's one of my infrastructures I'm going to create this year is storage areas for them. So in the winter I can put them in there so I won't lose any. I'm tired of losing some during the winter when it unexpectedly gets a hard frost. So, so I have this big, I still think I'll bonsai it. I just want to, it's a little late in the season to do what I would do to it. Because it would go into shock. So I can't and probably die. So I'll have to wait a year, so it'll have to sit in a pot for a year at least, but control it. But it's real. It is really soothing. It's one of those hyper focuses that is, you know, if you just spend the time with it, you can. I guess for me, a hyper focus is things that, like, as an ADHD brained person, right? I just have all these thoughts that go through my mind all the time. But when I have this hyper focus, I don't think of anything else but that one thing that I'm doing.
Uh-huh.
And it's one of the most peaceful things in my uh-huh. existence. So I love to do things that can bring a hyper focus to me. Because I'm like at peace during those times, and bonsai can be that when I'm out there. Especially if I just don't bring my phone out and I just like watering and taking care of it, I can just focus on that one mm-hmm. thing. So that's kind of what I like about gardening a little bit too. But now that I've made a garden, now that I've grown stuff a few years, you know, it's less, the novelty's worn off. So I think about other things. So now that I think about other things while I'm doing it, I'm not as into it.
It's not like that same sort of experience.
Yeah. It doesn't give me the peace
mm-hmm.
that I desire.
Yeah. I think there's a couple of reasons why I think it'd be great why I'd like to garden and grow vegetables. It's for that peace and connection to the earth. And a lot of it is like the connection to the earth. And then also like how cool to be able to grow your own food. Like, I think it's so amazing. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Well, the taste, it does taste. There's a cleanliness level that's amazing. Uh-huh. Like mm-hmm. a fresh zucchini is amazing.
Right. It's less dead, right? It's more alive when you have it fresh.
Yeah.
Right.
It's yeah. Kinda, I mean, just there's no time in between.
Yeah.
And. Though Anthony Bourdain did talk about, I'm not sure if I've mentioned it on here, but he talked about how food you got to look at is the appropriate level of rot.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He said, when you think about a lot of the food we eat is not fresh.
Right.
Like you're waiting for it to ripen, which mm-hmm. is rotting. And a lot of food we eat, you want aged beef.
Uh-huh.
That's rotting. Like it's the level. And he said, you would never want fresh fish. Like fresh fish can be gross.
Gollum. Hello, Gollum.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
You're looking for this level of not fresh. Is the just the perfect amount, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah. Anyway, that's my hyper. I got new trees out. I was just curious if you were a gardener.
Well, I think I was something else you were saying that I've heard, you know how you can hear something said so many ways, but then you hear it said a certain way on a particular day and it just like hits different or it just, you know,
yeah.
it absorbs into you differently. When you were talking about all the things you have to do for the tree, otherwise, you know, it might go into shock and die.
Yeah.
And I think it's so unfortunate that people don't treat themselves with that same level of care usually.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And yeah, you could do the same thing, but under certain conditions, you thrive. Other ones, you go into shock, and other ones, you might potentially die.
Like there are rules of thumb that you can't cut more a bonsai more than a certain percentage, like 30% in a year is like the max, because if you change it too much at once, it could die. Right. Similarly, for humans, they say don't buy a house and have a kid in the same year, right? They always there are these
and
big
get married.
Yeah, yeah. Like don't do all really these big events changes. In 1 year because it's really hard on you.
Stressful.
And we forget that very easily. People rush to getting married and buying the house and doing it all at once and then shocked when things blow up. Like you have a breakdown. Like, yeah, you did too much.
Well, I mean, and then also too, like the different varieties of trees and plants probably need a little bit different, you know, different things for can handle different levels of stress.
Yeah, some are less sensitive than others, for sure.
Like same for people too.
But they all have general rules. You should.
Well, yeah. I mean, I it's probably not a good idea to do that ever, really.
You don't transplant in the spring. If you transplant in the spring, it'll probably die, right? Hmm. You're probably gonna die.
Yeah.
Or in the summer, like in the summer when it's hot, when there's a lot of stress on it, you got to be gentle.
There's probably
books on it already. Life lessons from the garden.
Right. You know,
there should be. If there's not.
I'm sure there are, but yeah, it's always like what that other spin is.
Yeah.
What's the other way it's said or something?
Well, I've said like these self-help books, or self-help podcasts and people, they all say the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, they say it slightly different.
Right.
And you catch one and you're like, oh, that was so profound. And you're like, I've been listening to that same basic statement for 10 years. And now I'm going to listen because the way they said it was just amazing to me.
Right. Or the way that your ears were primed too. A combination of things.
You got to be ready to receive.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, I watch all these minimalist moms. Not all. I mean, I watch a few different minimalist moms that I like to watch on YouTube.
Hold on. Before you go. Okay. Now you're back. You're back.
Oh, okay. And one of them, she said something. And yeah, they each had like different professions. Oh, now you froze. We're taking turns freezing. It's still recording.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Now I see you. You were just like,
I think I was just,
I closed for a while.
I'm just still.
Oh, wow. That was incredible.
What?
You were tapping into your bonsai zone for listening to the steam.
I was listening to you. I was focused on you.
Wow. But it looked like you weren't even breathing. It was suspenseful, this lesson. Yeah. But like one of them, she used to be like a triage nurse. The other one, she was a speech language therapist. And this other one, she was a teacher. Those are like three of my favorites to watch. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. But they all have their different spins because of their perspectives with their life work and everything. This one who used to be a teacher, I really liked this that she said. I think it was her idea. Maybe it was somebody else's. Whatever. I heard it from her. Was, you know, we could feel kind of bad when we're decluttering, or if you're decluttering your wardrobe, for example, and then you feel bad because you wasted that money, especially if you're a frugal person. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and then you might want to hold on to it because, hey, I spent money for this. But if it's just taking up space, then it's kind of costing you money because, you know, it doesn't live for free in your home. So if you think about the money, that can go one way. But if you let it go, you can also remember you paid for the lesson. What did you learn from this item? Like, did you learn that, hey, I don't like that material. I don't like that neckline. I'm actually kind of over this. That was a different phase, you know, and just. When I'm letting go of things, if I'm not able to resell it or I don't have the time to do it, I'm thinking to myself like, oh, what was the lesson? I totally get behind that. That helps me so much.
You kind of just blew my mind there. Because I do have a lot of things I need to sell, get rid of I am very firmly in the, I have wasted money if I get rid of this, right? It's potential. Right now, this is potential money that I am throwing away.
Right.
Yet I know it has cost me money.
Right.
Cost me money and energy. It's cost me because I just still have it.
Exactly.
And I would be better off without these things probably. But I'm like, but when do I have time to sell it? And some of it's like, to make what?
$2? Depending on, right. I mean, there's so many of these things that come into play. And just for me, one of the things that was life changing was that idea that nothing lives in your space for free.
Yeah.
So that, you know, you're always making a choice between something and thinking, well, I don't know. What am I trying to say? That was it.
It's funny because I tried to tell my mom this too, because she's had storage units. Of stuff that she's like, well, I can sell it. And I was like, it's costing you money right now.
Right. And how much can you sell it for? And will you sell it?
Yeah. Like you're just spending money. So you got to get rid of it. I keep telling her to like, you just need to drop everything and move. Right. but like hard for me to do that. Yes, granted.
It's hard.
Because I'm like, well, I have a garage. So as long as I have a garage, yeah, I don't need to do that. I can live with, or I hate that I keep this stuff for so long. I'm going to sell it. I'm going to sell it. And then I am neglectful and I break it. And now it's spent all that time taking up, yeah, space. And now I can't do anything with it.
Yeah. I mean, there's, and I will say there's definitely, I've noticed a different level of fear that has entered the equation for me with getting rid of things since I've been, you know, now solo parenting.
Yeah.
I'm more thoughtful about just like letting stuff go. But, oh man, Silas, let me tell you. Yeah. I spent so many hours watching this stuff, thinking about this stuff, for the last couple of years that with more time, I would probably make my own YouTube channel on it with my own personal spin, because I just love this stuff and I feel like it can help people so much. But the other thing for me is, because I have like probably 2-3 big tubs or something that, you know, I've had marked ready to sell, whatever, and it's just been taking so long to leave that part of me is like, just get it out, get the extra space, it's taking up your space, blah blah blah. But then with the tariffs and other stuff coming up, it's like, well, if that happens, I could maybe make more for it. I mean, I hope that. I don't want, yeah, us to be in a situation, but it's like there's always a reason to hold on to it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know? But then I also find it like, this is a random, I don't know, maybe this will help somebody else out listening to. So yes, I'm always asking for your comments, people, millions of followers who are listening. But if it's helping you out, please let us know. But I just like donated 2 bags of stuff like this past weekend. And then it was to a community thrift store. So, which is great since it's going to go back to helping the community.
Yeah.
And part of it was like knowing, hey, remember how happy I get when I go to the thrift store and find a good deal?
Yeah.
Like it's going to make that person so happy too. And then going in and seeing the tag special for what was like $1.50.
Yeah.
It's like things aren't, unless if it's something super precious to you. Right now, fortunately, we are in a time period where it's not that hard to come by another shirt or another pair of pants.
Yeah.
If it's something that's just like whatever to you.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was I'm just super excited about about that topic.
I'm with you there. Like there's a number of things I wish I could just, what kills me is I'm like, this doesn't, I'm like, how much am I going to get for this? I'm not even going to get that much if I can find a buyer. But I just know, but for me, it's like this lifeline, even though part of me is logically is like, Silas, just clear out your garage and then you have more room to like make t-shirts and you could probably sell some t-shirts or sell more stuff. Get the stuff done you want to do.
It's just like what's worth more to you. And I think part of what's hard is that this goes against the nature of most people in our country for various reasons. I mean, we are brought up in our culture to consume and to hold on to things and then to store things when we no longer need them. We're not really like brought up to recycle. Yeah,
to a degree. I mean, there is a poverty. It's poverty trauma. Like I suffer from poverty trauma for absolutely.
Right. Like I remember that and I'm not trying to discount that, but I'm saying like, even on top of that, like
yeah,
just base level or whatever American, even without having that,
mm-hmm,
there's still this other culture that, and then you compound that with what you're saying too.
Yeah.
No. And then also I feel like part of it is compounded as being a creative, because you might want to use it on a set or you might need it. Oh my God,
the amount of clothes that I have not gotten rid of because I'm like, well, I might need a button up.
Yeah.
And so this might work on a set. And I'm like, I don't even like the style, yo. I just want,
right,
I just want 5 shirts right now, but I can't. I'm like, well, I'm going to, what if I get cast in some? You would think that I would just look at how little I get cast and not worry about it.
Or you might let it go and then get cast more because of the way that the universe works of like energy and all that. Because what I started doing, because I was holding on to some of these gowns and things, and I used to wear them and sometimes for like short films here and there in LA or blah, blah, blah. I don't know if I ever had to do that, wear them up here or not, but I just told myself, I was like, nope, when I get cast again in something, they're going to have a wardrobe budget for me. I can get rid of this thing.
Yeah. Unless you do a 48 with Silas and he's like, hey, go wear do you have a ball gown, Samantha?
And then you can go get that for me.
Okay.
Or we can go to the thrift store, or we can use one of your many t-shirts that you're not using for set and sew them up into a one of a kind creation for the 48.
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
But like, just in case, I think is kind of hardwired into us as people. Unless if we really work against it.
What kills me is then I have so much stuff that I buy something and then I go to put it away. Where will be good? And I go and I find the same thing there. I'm like, son of a bitch. Oh, I have this. If I had less things, I might remember that I had it.
Yep.
So now I'm like, oh, it's my ADHD tax, right? That's kind of part of it.
Yes. And it's like, I feel like, yeah, you have it. And then you have like heightened versions of it, because that's something that happens to a lot of people, just because of the average home has like over 300,000 items in it. You're not going to remember everything that you have.
For real?
Yeah.
Well, usually it's like, oh, do you have they need to borrow a snake, like a drain snake. This happened recently. And I was like, oh yeah. Well, yeah, I got one. Let me go. Oh, I don't see it anywhere. I guess I don't have one. I need one. So I'm like, go buy one. And then I use it. And then I'm like, okay. But I got to put this in a really good place, because I thought I had one and I didn't. So I have a really good idea for it. And that's when I find the one that I was like, oh, I had that really good idea before, where I definitely wouldn't forget where I put it. Oh, joy.
Oh, joy. Oh, happy joy. I have a hard time letting go of blankets also. Like, I love plush, soft throws and blankets.
Yeah. They're somewhat the bane of my existence, because my wife, White Samantha, they have all these blankets. I was like, can we put these somewhere? I'm like, well, where are we going to put them? Like, well, we don't use them. Why do we?
Oh, I love Gretchen so much.
It's warm.
Yeah. I'm like, I could help you guys find some place to put them if you want. Like, I also, I don't know. What I have too many things that I want to do. I'm like, I also would love to go help people organize their spaces and stuff like that. I don't know.
Oh,
I
get so excited. Do you get a thrill out of that?
I actually do. Like, I mean, I haven't done it because people haven't invited me. But one of the reasons why I don't leave my windows open, you may have heard me say this before a couple of times, my mom and I probably got it from her. We both do it. If the windows are open and we'll like see what somebody's house is like, it's like, oh, nice. Okay. But why don't they move the bookcase over there? And if they could just change that color. Like,
you don't leave your windows open because you judge other people's? Is that why?
It's not the judging. I mean, I'm not mean about it. I'm quite respectful. I'm not like, ew, why they do that? You know, but no, I mean, the window being open is just an invitation for somebody to look in my house. Like, I will leave the blinds open and then I will walk as far as I can to see what it looks like to see into my house. Oh, after it's dark, no, you're closing everything because, you know, and maybe that's just me being from New York or having my mom or the combination of both. But like,
the great thing about you moving is
that somebody's going to be looking into your house. If your windows are open, they're going to look in. Somebody, don't be surprised.
The great thing about you moving, having moved so much, is you can always say, well, it's because I'm from New York. Well, it's because I'm from Montana. Well, it's good.
I'm from
LA. So, you know, like, wait a second. You're just using it as convenient.
Well, but it's also true, right? Like, remember that time there was an earthquake?
Yeah.
And like,
well, that time.
I know there's so many times there's like an earthquake. I don't know. Whatever.
Were you here for the big one? The 2001 or something? 2000?
No, thankfully.
No,
I don't think so. Not 2001 though.
That's the only one I remember here as far as scary.
But seriously, if people's windows open, who's not looking inside? Like, how are you not going to look inside somebody's house when the window is open?
I think it depends on some factors. It depends how close to the street they are, like how obvious.
I mean, I'm not going to drive out of my way. It's not like the bat light or
there's
something.
There's a couple spots involved. I leave a little open generally. But then I'm like, you can't see, like you'd have to stay in certain areas to like see into it. So,
yeah, I mean, like I'll do my blind so like I get some light in.
But then if you have it closed, you also can't see out.
Well, that's why you have the blinds a certain way, or else, you know, get some sheer curtains that are privacy curtains so that you can see out, but people can't see in. Yeah. But once it's dark and you put the lights on, that changes the situation. So,
yeah. Maybe I'm an exhibitionist and that's why I'm like, okay.
I think also because you're a guy, like men worry far less about this, but also whenever I meet women who don't, like when I meet men who aren't, I'm like, yeah, you're a guy, that's normal. Like I would expect you to be the normal for the guy, but whenever normal for men, but whenever I meet women who just have their like all windows all open, especially if they're on the first floor, especially if they're on like a street where people can walk past. I'm like, how are you alive now?
It's the level of security that they probably got brought up with, or they weren't one. There's a lot of fears that are learned, and I'm not saying that not all, and they're not bad. It's not bad that they're learned, but it's, I mean, if you see people like, I used to lock my door all the time. But now where I live, it's not as much as I should.
Well, it's good that you feel comfortable. Man, I'm so locking all the, I'm always talking about locking the doors. I was going to play a joke on my friend who I know his family didn't lock the doors. Why am I telling this random story? This is just to show like how obsessed I am with locking doors. That's the moral of the story.
Okay.
And his girlfriend was coming to visit him. His parents were out of town. I think we were in high school or was college vacation or something. I don't know, whatever. And it was when we were living in Montana and he did not live right in town. Perfectly okay for a place to be doors unlocked, but not by my standards. I was just like, you can't have the door unlocked. What are you thinking? I'm going to drive up in the middle of the night and scare you. And then you're going to have to lock your doors. I didn't. I thought about it. I didn't. And he was like, what's wrong with you, Samantha? And I was like, New York, you can take the girl out of New York.
Yeah. But I'm like comfortable with the neighbors and stuff. And I do think having a little, I might be more nervous if I didn't have like a Ring camera.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, alerts me 45 seconds later of something happened. Sometimes I'm like, what? Oh, God. Wish it would have told me that 40 seconds ago when that person was walking up.
I mean, people can pick locks, right? But it just makes you feel better.
Yeah.
No,
I get it. I have felt more. It's weird. I am definitely more fearful about more things in my life than I used to be. But then some things I've completely lost that I'm not. I think I'm so worried about these other things now. I'm like, that's the least of my.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, I got to ask.
I wish an MF-er would try, honestly. Yeah, you're going to break in? Please. I'm waiting for that. Come on.
Oh, gosh. That. Oh, no.
Let me unleash.
That should be the podcast episode. No, another T-shirt idea. I don't know. Maybe. Signs for dog walkers.
For dog walkers.
No, don't unleash.
That's a T-shirt.
Know. I'm just
unleash the beast. Yeah.
Yeah. See, there's so many. But okay. Something about driving, and also the other thing. It's funny because I wouldn't even say that I was fearful, and I think that in this instance, when I'm talking about closing your blinds, locking your doors, this and that, like go when you sit in a restaurant or something, try to have your back against the wall so that like, you know, just that sort of situational awareness stuff. Like I wouldn't say that I was fearful. I'd just be like, just do this and don't think twice about it. Like, that's just what you do. It doesn't enter as I think since it's not something you do, it seems like you must be so afraid. How do you live your life? And I'm just like, lock your door. And
I am not comfortable eating at a restaurant with my back to the door.
I mean, I don't. Well, yes,
I won't.
I said wall, right? I mean, wall. Like,
well, yeah.
At least just nowhere.
You said back to the wall. I don't need a wall there, but I need to see the exit. Like, I need to see who is coming in. I need to be able to scan. I am not comfortable. So Gretchen knows this about me. So she will place herself to make sure that I can turn so that I can look at it, whether it's even if we're with some other people, because she knows that I'm trying to maneuver. She knows I'm trying to maneuver. So where I'm going to sit and where the kids, I can just say, go sit over there. No, use.
Yeah.
Switch places. But with other people, she knows that's one of my quirks and that I will not be like able to relax. And I don't know I don't know if that is an OCD thing. I don't know if that's anxiety. It could be anxiety.
Or it could just be you saw something in a spy movie one time and was like, that's a good idea. That's how I'm going to eat from now on.
But that's kind of anxiety probably. Like, cause if it's because of a fear there. I mean, it's not,
I just feel like sometimes anxiety gets a bad rep, whatever, because it could be anxiety, but I'm just saying it could also
anxiety is important in life. Yeah. It is very important. Anxiety exists. It should be like an Inside Out too. You need anxiety.
Yeah.
But it's when it controls some things in your life that it's.
Right.
If it's too much.
If it gets too out.
It's altering. Yeah.
Yeah.
I used to, here's the best thing about dating for me. The best thing about dating a white woman is being able to say like, oh, yo, black men don't, as a black man, I cannot have my back to the door.
Wow.
She just assumes a lot of things are cultural that
you
I've just said.
So, you sounded so black.
Because then she can't argue with me about it. Because I'm like, hey, I don't know. What? You got to respect my blackness, okay? Black Lives Matter. Let me sit the this way, okay?
Oh, man.
But then I can't pull it with other black people because they're like, no, that's not a black thing. What are you doing?
Oh, and that's so funny. Too many things I could possibly say.
Have you ever done that?
I've definitely said black men. Listen, as a black man, white woman that I'm dating, as a black man,
have you ever said, you know, hey, black women don't do that. Don't say that to a black woman.
Like, oh, yeah.
Even if you've known it's not really a black thing and it's a you thing.
Oh, wait. No. Okay. I don't think I have.
I don't really know if it
I
is.
I probably should, but no.
Oh. All I need is one other black person to confirm it. And then I'm like, well, no, that's a black thing. I guess that's just.
Yeah.
I've been, because I think I have in my life discovered some things. Were black things that I didn't know. And I was like, oh, okay. I feel justified now. That's cultural.
That's totally happened to me where there are certain things and I'm like, oh, I didn't know that's where that came from. But it would just be like any one of my multiple races.
Yeah. Well, be like, oh, movies. No. I've watched also like culturally, I've inundated myself within the culture because I was growing up in so many suburbs that were not. That I wanted to know what I should know. So I think sometimes I don't even know what I picked up on, like the little subtleties that you picked up in entertainment or whatnot.
Right? So I think maybe one of my, probably, I don't know, one of my favorite, very stereotypical ones is talking to the television. I mean, oh. I straight up was doing that the other day when watching a YouTube video. Just me, my kid is like playing and it was like a fashion video I was watching and I was just looking at it and I'm like, oh, that's not cute. Why are you wearing that? Okay. You know, I like that you're trying. I see your point. Oh, you need to stop. Like I was seriously, and I don't always do that, but there was just something about this particular video that was bringing it forthright.
I will say the whitest thing about me is I cannot stand talking during things. My God.
When we're, well, it depends. Like at the movies, sometimes I usually don't talk at the movies. And I can bother people when I tell them to be quiet. I actually offended somebody before I'm thinking very specifically.
Telling him to be quiet?
During the movie, yeah. I would tell them like, shh, and they got really upset. But the thing is, they don't really whisper. They try to whisper, but they don't really have a whispering voice, even when they think they're whispering.
Oh, you knew them?
And then they were mad at me and then said that I should tell the kids to be quiet too. And I was like, you're the adult. Like, the kids don't know. They don't know. They're children. Like, you be quiet. They got all offended.
You should know better. You're grown.
Yeah. Okay. Before I forget though, I do want to ask you this because I got to tell you the reaction that my friend had. Gosh, did we talk about this already? If we did, sorry, you cut me off. Did I tell you about an experience when driving and seeing a runner?
What? No.
Okay. So are you good?
Yeah. Okay. I'm waiting for your.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. Okay, so I was driving up a hill and there was a runner coming down. You know how it has like the little strip of paint between like the road and the sidewalk or the road and a hill, like that little strip of paint where the car, you're not supposed to go past.
Oh yeah. 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 Yeah.
And it wasn't like exactly a running lane, but it's just, there was the strip of paint and there was a runner coming down the hill running towards as the car's going up.
Okay.
And I was just thinking, I said to my friend, I said, you know, it's wild because we live in a world where right now it's very hard to trust people. Like we're not in the culture isn't of just going and trusting strangers right now.
Right.
I thought, but then, you know, every day you also are incredibly trusting. We're incredibly trusting with strangers. I said, like, you know, we were just on the pier. Well, someplace by the water. Okay. I said, we were just there. I'm like, it's wild. Anybody could just come up and push you right over. Yeah. The fence part or whatever the heck, that's not that high.
Yeah.
I said, and also look at this guy running. He's just running. And all these cars, that's a lot of trust. There could be bad drivers. He does, you know, somebody could just accidentally hit him. Like,
yeah.
Thank you. And she, and I said, man, isn't that, trying to think about that? And she just looked at me and she was like, wow, you live in a terrifying world, Samantha. and we both started laughing so hard because for me, I was like, that's not terrifying. Like that's just, and then we were kind of having, it wasn't really a debate. It wasn't like heated. It was just like a quandary because she said those things never entered her mind until I said it. And I was like, and then she was wondering who's more safe. And I was like, well, I would figure my version would be safe because then at least, you know, you could jump out of the way and keep your eye out for the car. But it was just interesting. Like I didn't feel that I was living in a scary world. It just seems like, yeah, this is just, that's just life. And for her, she felt like it was so frightening because I was thinking of those things. So I told her I wanted to take a poll to see, I wonder how many people are like me and how many people are like her.
Well, there's a mix of like when I'm driving, I'm like, people are way too trusting of each other. Like I am keeping an eye on these people all the time. If a car is coming toward me, behind me, I'm like, I'm not trusting that they're going to stay with it the whole time. Or maybe they're just going to decide to pop me right then. Right. I'm always just like, oh, I'm just going to be a little cautious. And I've definitely thought before, like, man, I could just hit this person. Like, why? We do live generally, I think, in unthought about trust. Like, we trust that people are going to obey the rules and follow these rules, which I think why is part of the reason why what is happening right now in our country is so frightening, is because when people are blatantly not following the rules that we thought we established, and you're like, oh no, well, I can't trust anything then. If you're okay with this, I can't trust you because you're not playing with the rules that we already established. Like just the idea that we drive at 60 to 70 miles an hour down a highway without much thought is kind of crazy.
It really is. I mean, just earlier, I was singing the Hairspray musical at the top of my lungs while driving 60 miles an hour.
night. It's kind of insane.
It is
how
insane.
Casually we drive in these metal death traps.
Oh my gosh. I would that feels safer than a self-driving car until every car was self-driving maybe, and it was like old news. But I think I would feel more comfortable. Well, I guess it depends. It depends on who the driver is and then who the self-driving.
I think if you are 70 years old, you should be required to have a self-driving car.
70?
Yeah.
70?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Silas, you know some old 70-year-olds? 70 is not that old.
I think judgment impairment is present.
Silas.
I'm basing that off of every president we've ever had.
Well, you need to get out more and be around more 70-year-olds, because 70-year-olds, a lot of them drive really well.
I would bet that there are less than you think.
Okay, fine.
There's a cognitive decline between 70 and 75. And so I'd rather do on the safe side and go 70.
You would rather somebody older than 70 not driving the country. I could get behind that. But not driving a car, well, I do not. Because I plan to be 70 driving. I'm going to be driving.
Why? You should have people driving you around at that point, right? Drive me around.
I might want to drive myself.
I think it is safer to err on the side of early than late.
I mean, I think it needs to be case by case, because not every 70-year-old is the same. I mean, really. Not every 70-year-old is the same.
No, they're not. So there's some 90-year-olds that do it, but there's definitely some 90-year-olds that I'm like, why are they driving?
There's also some 30-year-olds that shouldn't. Okay, 90 is quite different. Okay, 90 is quite, that's quite a jump from 70 to 90.
Yeah.
I mean,
but
come on.
I'm still erring the side of early.
I want to be able to drive when I'm 70. Maybe I'll even be flying a plane by then. You know, I'm just like, there's so many options. 70 is not that old.
Yeah, my dad drives. He's 75. But if they said he only could drive a self-driving car, I'm not going to. I'm like, if the stats support it, fine. If it makes the road safer, okay.
Oh, self-driving. I thought you were saying they shouldn't drive at all. That's why I'm like, that's harsh. That they shouldn't drive or only be able to have a driver. So basically, they're going to be rich or they're going to ride the bus.
Self-driving Ubers, free Ubers. I don't care. I don't care who pays for it. Just I'm fine. Government paying for it. Whatever. Tax me to keep people off the roads. I also don't think you should get your driver's license till you're like 25.
Oh yeah. There's a lot of things people shouldn't do until their brain is fully formed.
Yeah.
At 26, did we say?
I mean, I think you really have to just look at, you can look at car insurance people. They know when you should be driving.
I don't entirely agree with that though, because I was driving way before I was 25.
So was I.
Yeah, and
I should not have been. Yeah.
I should have been.
You think you should have been. I bet there were a lot of people behind you that were like, why is she driving? Why is
that? No, they probably thought I was a 70-year-old. I was driving all slow. My car didn't have great pickup. I wasn't driving like crazy fast. I was more of a slow, cautious driver.
You could just go to insurance companies and they would tell you exactly who should be driving and who shouldn't. They know. Because they... You can tell based on the rates. They know exactly who causes accidents. Like it's.
Well,
yeah. Oh, it's real. I mean, they have everything down to a science. They know the stats on everything. So that's why when you see a car, you know, you see jumps in prices at certain age or drops, you know, there's a reason why. It's not random. It's because they know the risk is greater with X, Y, and Z. They absolutely know it. It costs the money.
So I feel like car insurance might be the only insurance that you're really getting behind right now with the they know what's up. Trust them.
Well, pet insurance.
Yeah.
They absolutely have proven. They know every breed. They know the breed, what it's going to have a problem with, most likely.
That's a really good idea. And, like, before I ever get a pet again, I should call the insurance company.
And that's the reason that mutts are the cheapest to insure.
Heightened immune system.
The crossbreeding gets rid of the ailments that, like, German Shepherds always get hip dysplasia. They just get it. If you get a German Shepherd, you're going to have hip dysplasia. So if you get one, they're going to charge higher for whatever that thing is, or will not even, or it will tell you, we're not covering this.
Interesting.
Because they know they're going to have it. So they're not interested in covering that animal. They know. So health insurance is kind of crooked, but I mean, there's degrees that they do definitely know some things, like why they won't. If you're a smoker, they're going to charge a lot more because they know what it does, right? But I also think it is a reason. I think there would be a huge problem if a law was passed saying that you had to insure your firearm. Because insurance companies would know exactly what the percentages are of for deaths, and people would lose their mind when they discover their insurance premiums, you know, quadruple if they have a kid. And if they live in rural areas, what it's going to do to the, like, people lose their mind because insurance companies look at the stats. Because ultimately it's science. The stats are science, and science tells you what's going on. So as much as people want to argue about it, that there's a reason people put money on it. And it's a reason the oil companies have started making plans for rising sea levels. It's getting hard to get insurance on some coastal areas because they know what's going to happen. And they're like, nope, we're not going to insure there anymore. Just like the wildfires. They're like, yeah, we know.
Stats.
They know. Yeah.
The stats.
They know. And they actually, insurance companies believe scientists.
You know, it's kind of too bad. I'm thinking, this is a pointless thing to say.
Did I depress you?
Was this interesting for? No, you didn't. But I'm listening to you, but I'm also thinking of the various topics we've talked about. You know, it's marinating in here, and when you're talking about how, you know, insurance companies and all these other people know the stats and this and that, and I'm like, yeah, it's too bad. Like, you can't really see the stats of somebody if you're looking at their dating profile or something like that. Like, that's a very big life decision, like, to get involved with somebody, but you don't really see their, you don't know their stats. But if you could only see the stats, really the stats on other human beings, you could be more informed.
And this is where the stats don't work, is the exceptions. With the stats in place based on ways people grow up, I have nearly passed miracles that I have defied the stats in not being physically abusive in my family and of being on drugs. Like, the fact that I'm, like, sober and nonviolent, I've defied odds for based on my growing up. Like, there's only like a, from what I've grown up on, I think there's only like a 20% chance of me not being an abuser on either of those things, just based on stats. So there are people that escape it, right?
Right.
But then you go, wait, if Silas isn't the one, then wait, what about the three others in the family? There's a 75% chance.
Because the stats are hard with people because it's not just their like circumstances, it's their choices. So I was more thinking of like the stats and somebody's choices over a large period of time because I feel like you could kind of get the stats from somebody when you ask, if they're being honest about their history, but you don't really know like the stats of their behavior over a course of a certain amount of time.
Right. But then you have to figure out, you have to decide how much stuff is really choice.
Uh-huh.
Because when your brain is formed, you know, you're forming your brain, the stats are there because I think it alters your brain in certain ways.
Right. Yeah.
So it's not, I think there's some things that are just not just choices. It's just, we think they're choices, but they're not. We've kind of been programmed to do this.
Maybe I should say behaviors then, because I see what you're saying, but I would think if we have, let's say, for Silas, subject Silas right now, we have like the history stats of how you grew up, like the circumstantial stats of how you grew up. But then if there were the stats on your behavior, those stats that I'm going to call your choices, that the behavior stats could show then with better clarity that you would have not fallen into the category that your history stats would have shown.
Yeah, possibly.
And at the same time, like, yeah, that sort of quandary of how much is behavior is actually free will choice and how much is. But, you know, the brain does have neuroplasticity. It's just to what extent? And then within that, how much wiggle room is there?
My daughter told me about one of her friends and about like, oh, yeah, this is her boyfriend. Her boyfriend has done this and this and this. And I said to myself, I was like, oh, she has a bad childhood. Like her, I know exactly what her family life is like.
Yeah.
Fast forward 2 years later, and she's looking to maybe like, hey, if her dad does this, can she just come over? I'm like, yeah. Uh-huh. I mean, how predictable. I know based on who you're trying to date, what your life is. Oh, I know what her life is like at home. Absolutely. I already know. I don't need to know much else about her. I'm going to be right 80% of the time. Just based off of stats.
Right.
It's sad, but it's also like, it is something like when you feel like you know something, because you're like, you've worked in the, you know, the history on that, like, oh, this leads to that.
Yeah.
When you see the end result or one of those side things to go, okay, I'm just going to keep an eye out for this person because I know.
Right.
I know I'm likely. I hope I'm wrong, but.
Right.
You know. Let's make sure they know they have a safe place to go if they need to, because ultimately they'll have to make a choice. But I'm guessing this is what is like at home. And it's heartbreaking for kids when you're like, when I'm working with kids, whether it's in soccer or in theater, like I'm like, I think I have some ideas of what's going on at home, positive and negative. Just. Even just if it's from seeing the kid look in the crowd every time they take a shot, they look in the crowd. Was that okay? Are they going to be upset that I missed that?
Oh man.
Right. Messes you up. We are, I feel like there's a Hamlet quote that would be appropriate here.
I was actually thinking of a quote from, I think it was
Tempest.
Miss Julie.
Oh, like we are stardust.
Julie or after Miss Julie. Children see the world so clearly without the sophistication to protect themselves.
Oh. Ooh, who's that from?
I think it was Miss Julie or after Miss Julie. I think it might have been Miss Julie. Did it in a monologue like 20 years ago.
After Julie? Is that a sequel?
Miss Julie, no, after Miss Julie, I think it's the modernization of Miss Julie by Patrick Marber.
Oh, okay.
Another one is the classic, and I forget who wrote the classic. But
I need to look that up. Okay. Hey, we're about out of time. We never even got to our topic that we were going to talk about today, which is great.
Yeah.
But it's been a... Still high value. I think it's still a high value podcast.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, definitely a lot of different things, a lot of different topics, but it all, I think, was spurred on by you bringing up gardening and what happens when we can thrive under the right conditions? What happens if there are the wrong conditions? And then spotting, right? Like spotting what's safe and unsafe in our world, and how children grow in good conditions or poor conditions, and how can you give them safe shelter when they're not having safe conditions at home?
You need the right sunlight.
You do.
If you're going to grow tomatoes.
Yeah. You do need the right sunlight.